Live from State Street in the heart of Chicago, you are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Waddle and Sylvie, WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Heard a lot of baseball in the first hour of the show. Cubs go to Arizona. White Sox, have we told you, they have activated Loy, but he's not in the lineup as of yet. Maybe they change things. And a lot of angst with Sox fans because it's so, so bad. So bad. We took a lot of calls on that. We had a little bit of Caleb Williams stuff. I told you that I had a conversation with someone up at Hallis on how much they loved dealing with him in the 2 days that he was up there. Tom Thayer is obviously longtime voice of the Bears. He is a Super Bowl champion, a hell of a guy, and he's going to be a part of our broadcast on draft day. We're going to be, for the second year in a row, at Soldier Field for the big official Bears draft party. That will be awesome. There were some Bears players who were there last year. I think Braxton Jones was at Soldier. DJ Moore was there. Cole Kmet was there. And today at 5:20, so I believe every day at 5:20, we're going to have a pair of tickets to give away to the sold-out draft party.
Oh, nice.
So every day at 5:20 this week when we're on the air. We may have to adjust depending if we're not on the air, because I think there's a Sox game one of those days. But anyway, today at 5:20, we're going to have a Bears trivia question. And Tyler, are we going to do first correct?
First correct caller, yes.
First correct caller at 5:20 with this Bears draft themed question. So be listening at 5:20. This is sold out. I don't believe you can really get tickets. And we've got a pair of tickets for the draft day party.
Such a fun event.
Let's go to Tom Thayer right now on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline. Are you ready? Are you all set for the draft party?
I am, but I think you should give a pair of tickets to Don from Joliet to have the contest and who's going to get first between the White Sox guys. And, you know, growing up a lifelong White Sox fan down here, I was listening to you guys on the app beforehand, and golly, I wanted to separate myself from that negative to the Bears draft party. And I am excited. You know, Goodell's going to go to the podium and say, let's get this thing started with the first pick in the draft. The Bears are on the clock. And I kind of hope, even though everybody kind of feel that it is going to be Caleb Williams, I hope they take their full 10 minutes so they have an opportunity to take any other calls if people are still trying to get a hold of them for number 9. And so rather than just rushing Caleb to the podium, get his hug, get his jersey, and, you know, let the fun begin, just take your time and see if anybody wants to call and make a early play for number 9.
And to your point about, you know, the White Sox lack of optimism, Tom, I think it's 180 degrees for this Bears team. Can you remember? Nobody's closer to this team than you for a number of reasons. Can you remember a time where there was more optimism and legitimate and well-deserved optimism for a franchise?
You know, do you think C.J. Stroud adds to that, T. Waddle? Because it's not a foregone conclusion that because you bring in a rookie quarterback, you have to expect mediocrity from the start,
right?
And through a year or two until he gets his feet wet. Now, when you look at guys like C.J. Stroud that have come in and been on fire immediately and can take a team, it's had a challenge season into the playoffs, especially when they brought in some of the support that Ryan Poles has brought in throughout last season, DJ Moore, Montez Sweat, and then the rest of the free agents that he's brought in this year. I think that, the optimism should be high. And you know what, too, is last week, I'm glad that Montez Sweat brought up the fact that finally somebody from the locker room is talking about the importance of beating Green Bay.
Thank you.
Because if you just sit there and hide behind those guys and think everything else is for second, third, and fourth, then you're doing the entire organization a disservice. So I like the fact that Montez has been here for a short period of time, but he's also already notifying the locker room the importance and, beating those guys as quickly as you can.
So are you excited about Caleb Williams?
I am. You know, the more I watch Caleb Williams, the more I like the fact that, you know, he's not pulling the ripcord as soon as he gets pressure on the, from the defensive line, from the offensive line, that he's still looking downfield. He's not trying to cross the line of scrimmage and then turn it into a positive run. I would rather see a guy that's going to try to buy some time behind the line of scrimmage and still looking for an open opportunity downfield, whether if you have a speed receiver where that can get deep, if you have talented tight ends that are always a target in that intermediate zone, or else you have a couple of the other experienced guys like Keenan and DJ that are, you know, are always an option, even though they're covered because they have the NFL experience. And so I am, and I'm excited, you know, that, you know, where the optimism is in the development, because, you know, people out there want to say, oh, Caleb is a lot like Patrick Mahomes. And then Caleb says about himself that he's a lot like Aaron Rodgers. I think it's a really great comparison to either whoever you're talking about, whether it's the outside evaluators or somebody like Caleb that evaluates himself.
Tom, before we get to discussing what you think they should do at nine, I'm more interested in whether or not, are you confident that they have their problem at center solved?
No. I still think it's an open competition. You don't have a guy that's got bona fide, you know, 5 years of college starts, 4 years of college starts, even 3 years of college starts in the majority of games. And they don't have a bona fide NFL vet that's been behind center for, you know, 4 or 5 years throughout his career that just happened to get on the free agent market and a team paid for him. So I think, you know, outside the right tackle, I think the competition is open on the offensive line. To me, is I think Nate Davis can be a good football player, but he's got to show me that he can be a 17-game-a-year good football player. Just like Tevin Jenkins, when he was playing and he had multiple games back-to-back-to-back and moving from right guard to left guard, they talked about him having the ability to be one of the better guards in the division, and I hope he sets his aspirations on being one of the better guards in the league. But again, that takes a track record of success to earn that qualification. And then when you talk about Braxton, he's a super intelligent guy. He's really dedicated. He spends a lot of time on the field. But, you know, in the off season, because of the requirements of that position, you got to spend a lot of time in the weight room. And you got to become stronger. You got to become more physical. If you're really going to have a running game that's going to complement a young quarterback, and the Bears have done a nice job running the ball, but it's got to be, you know, point of attack runs, and you know, the tackles have a lot to do with the way they work with tight ends, the way they work with offensive guards, their ability to pull to the outside. So, you know, center, yeah, I think the competition is open along the offensive line as well.
With that evaluation of the O-line, and I think it's just very honest that, hey, there are some good players, but there are a lot of question marks. Would you like to see them use the ninth pick on an offensive tackle?
You know what, getting to the ninth pick specifically, I would have targeted guys.
Okay.
And if one of those targeted guys were there, then I would be willing to make that pick. If that guy was not there, then I would be willing to create some draft collateral, maybe move down, find a guy that you know is going to be waiting for his opportunity to pick, and maybe increase your opportunity in the second or third round. And so if Dallas Turner was there, if Verse was there, if Adunze is there, if Joe Alt was there, then I would be willing to, you know, go up to the podium and make the call. But if one of the guys that I really set my sights on was not there, there's a lot of guys in this draft that I think you'll be able to move down and get an opportunity to fill that void. Maybe it is at center. You know, maybe it is another pass rusher out there. So, I think that you really have to have your sights set on that, a nine guy that you want, and still field calls throughout picks 2 through 8.
So of those, I think you mentioned 4 of those guys. Give me your order of preference on how you have those guys. Who would excite you most if they were there at 9?
I would go Alt, Turner, and Rome. Those would be my three guys. Alt being the first guy. If he's there, I'm picking him. Boom. You got a decade-long bookend tackles. They're going to be, you know, playing at a high level from the first snap of OTAs. And then if you want to help Montez Sweat and really make them thin out their point of pass protection from the opponent, then it's get a guy like Dallas Turner on the outside on the other end, where now you're going to be guaranteed probably 2 one-on-ones per pass blocking configuration. That's going to open up your opportunity for sacks, turnovers, in getting the ball back for the offense.
Can you make the case too, Tom? Like if you're kind of I know that they'll take the best player available, but if Alt is gone, which is most likely of the three that you mentioned.
Right.
Can you make the case if you're on the, you know, like Verse and Roma Dunze are on the same level to you, the same guy, same grade, same everything, that the pass rusher, the position is more important than the wide receiver, especially because you have DJ and Keenan Allen. And at that point, you may be the tiebreaker is drafting on need.
Yeah, I agree with you, because to me, if you got the trickle-down effect and you have the two quality receivers in DJ and Keenan, then you come back to the line of scrimmage and you have Cole Kmet and now Gerald Everett, and then you move it one level back and you have DeAndre Swift you have
Khalil Herbert.
Khalil Herbert and Roshan. So you have multiple levels of pass opportunities, but I think when you look at, you know, how many times did they sack Jordan Love last year? And you want to talk to, you know, whoever you consider to be the best team in the division right now, how many sacks did they have against Jordan Love last year? And I think if you don't find a way to make their offense dysfunctional and all the other ones in the league, then that goal of winning the division is going to be even harder.
So, what would you do then with Braxton Jones? I think this was one of the questions that you've sent to us. If they do, if they do take a tackle, are you keeping them? And is he your swing tackle then?
Well, I would have to go out there and investigate wealth. If someone out there is really interested in a quality starting left tackle that don't become available very often, then I would go out there and kind of put Braxton Jones for sale. Then Larry Borum would be my flip tackle. And it's no insult at all to Braxton Jones, because what he's done since he's been here is immeasurable in a lot of scouting ways, because you don't take a guy from a small college in the mid rounds and think he's going to walk in here and be a multi-year starter immediately. But if you went there and had an opportunity to draft Alt, I would have to go out there and, you know, at least see if there is any value out there for Braxton, if somebody's interested in it, and giving you, recapping the value of him, whether it's a fifth or a fourth round pick. Then if you get a fourth round pick, then you're making money.
Some of your questions, I've not shared a lot of it, but every now and then we'll get a text from you, and I look forward to this.
It's talking ball, man. It's
like your question of the day, where how do you come up with these, and do you have a question of the day for our listeners or for us today?
And is Sylvie back in your good graces after not responding as promptly as you would like?
He's on the verge, but Danny went to bat for him, okay. So... he's back on the list. So I do have a question I was going to send out you guys. So if you look at, and we're going to leave Caleb out of this, but it's going to be Jaden Daniels and a guy like Kyler Murray or Bryce Young. If you're looking at a quarterback, are you okay with tall and lean, or are you okay with, you know, shorter and thicker? And I think that's, you know, kind of what I was looking at in terms of the, looking at all the templates of the quarterback position coming out in the draft, and what would you be okay with?
Well, the last combo I'd be good with, Tom, is short and lean, and that's Bryce Young, and that's one of the reasons why, as talented as he is, I would have stayed so far away from him. He may prove me wrong and be the best quarterback in the league soon, but I would still take the guy Like, there's a limit, though, Tom, because you can't give me 5'9" and stout, because I'll take the taller, lean guy.
Yeah.
If you're saying 6 foot tall and 220 pounds, which is kind of what Caleb Williams is, right? 6 foot, yeah. Yeah, 6.5,
six,
maybe.
1 7/8, 217 pounds. But, yeah. I mean, what you got a Kyler Murray who's thick, or else you got Jaden Daniels, who they say is slight, tall and thin. You know, what would be your preference if you were the GM of the 34th team?
I think I would take tall and thin.
Me too. I want him to see over the line, right? Yeah. I mean, like, Brady is tall and thin, but he doesn't run like Jaden Daniels. Yeah. That's just the difference.
Jaden Daniels has got a narrow set of shoulders, but I think he could actually, if they get him in the right situation, Tom, I mean, you get him in the weight room and ask him, you know, you don't want to ruin a throwing motion by bulking up, but I think some quarterbacks can add some weight and provide some protection. I'd be scared to death, especially with his desire to tuck and run, that at the next level he'll get hurt quickly.
Well, you know it brings RG3 to mind, because he's a guy that hit his leg on the belly of, I think, Haloti Ngata, and he, you know, blew his knee out like that. And so it wasn't a pounding hit that presses your shoulders into the ground. It's just your body swinging along and hitting an incredibly big man. So, you know, that was just one of my questions that I was thinking about as I was looking at all the quarterback candidates that are coming in.
It's really interesting, too, because, like, I know that everyone loves Jaden Daniels and his play is spectacular, but his frame, Tom, would bother me. And not just that, but, like, Caleb Williams scrambles to throw.
Yeah.
There are times where he will tuck and run, but I never feel when I'm watching his film that he is being careless or reckless. Not just taking care of the football, but his body. The kid that they drafted in Indianapolis last year didn't last more than 5 or 6 games, and he's 6'4" and 230 pounds, but he plays the game reckless, and if he doesn't change how he plays, as talented as he may be, he's going to constantly find himself hurt. And that, to me, is the quality that you have to be able to identify with these guys as they're coming from the collegiate game. Does he put his body in harm's way? Is he reckless? That's one of the things that leaves me more comfortable with Caleb Williams, because I think he does a better job protecting himself.
You know, one thing that does make me nervous about college quarterbacks is the college quarterbacks that are just looking at pitchers from the sideline.
Yes.
And now you're not really learning everything about the offense, and you're not learning extensive terminology and how it fits to every single thing that you're saying in terms of knowing the vulnerabilities of the protection you're calling in the huddle, in what everybody's job is and how it fits. Now everybody's looking towards the sideline. So it takes you a while to become comfortable in being in a huddle and using the terminology that they have in the modern day NFL that's so exhausting that it takes you a long time to master terminology. And all these programs that have these kids that come out and just looking at signs from the sideline, that has development concerns for me as well.
Do you have any big passion for or against Hard Knocks?
You know, I used to like it.
Like for the Bears, because the Bears could be one of the teams that is forced into doing it, and they have all these great storylines. And maybe they end up getting it this year.
Well, if you're going to do it and get it out of the way. But when you talk about the Hall of Fame game, you're talking about getting ready for a European trip, all the whole fanfare that goes along with Caleb Williams and how many cameras would be following him. You know, there probably would be a more efficient time to do it in terms of the Bears, but if everybody's required to do it, then do it, get it out of the way, and then don't worry about it for the conceivable future.
Yeah.
You think if, in fact, Hard Knocks was up there with all their cameras, you'd see more of Joniak walking trying to catch a little more camera time?
He would be a moth unlike any other.
Yeah.
He would see those lights go on, and he would be in the background, and he would be in every shot. America would get to know the real the real, you know, disgruntled football guy, for
disgruntled,
sure.
Disgruntled football guy.
I just didn't know if he would be, you know, like, he'd tell us on the air, I don't want that distraction. I don't want that. Let's just play ball. But then the cameras show up, and next thing you know, you're seeing all these cameos of Joniak.
Well-dressed,
yeah. And walking in front of the scene, yeah.
His hair would be did every day, and, yeah. You know, he would get multiple haircuts during the course of training camp, and he would get a bigger notebook to act like he was, you know, oh, my God.
It's great.
He would be America's NFL darling if Hard Knocks ever hit the Bears.
All right. We will see you in a week, 10 days at Soldier Field.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Be there early.
See you, Tom.
Be there early. be there early.
He's telling us when to be there for our show.
I've always, like, he spurs a good football conversation every time, you know, he reaches out. But it's a really good point. It's the one thing, too, he mentioned that look, I am so excited about the direction they're going and the quarterback. I said this to Tyler the other day. I wish there was just a little more film of him playing from under center or playing in structure. Everything is like Tom said, as you look into the sideline, it's all in shotgun. It's all, you know, schoolyard air raid football. I definitely believe that he can be coached up to play the style that is necessary in the NFL. But these days, it's hard to predict how everyone will adapt.
I forgot who it was. Someone either had a video or I was reading, because there was so much again this weekend that, again, penalized Lincoln Riley. Like, everyone always usually says, well, Lincoln Riley's a really great offensive mind. And this person that I saw said the opposite, said Lincoln Riley's offense, he used it as a negative.
Because I know Kurt Warner's not a fan of his offense.
And whoever it was that I was watching their piece or reading their piece, they held what they brought to the table offensively as a negative.
Listen, I can see that. I can see a player playing in that system coming into the NFL. You need to be rewired in certain ways. So it's going to take an experienced coordinator and quarterback coach, and it's going to take a young man that has the capacity to be rewired in some ways and is willing to learn and willing to be coached. And I think those are all qualities Caleb Williams has. But if you think Caleb Williams is going to stand back in shotgun every single snap and just run around and play backyard football in this system, A, the Bears wouldn't allow that. B, it won't work at the next level. It just doesn't.
It's why I don't mind them having the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I like getting to camp a week early. A week earlier than everybody else.
Yeah.
When you have a rookie quarterback who's going to start from the jump, let's go.
Yeah, I'm with you.
312-332-3776. Waddle's World coming up. I think we have an update on the Cubs injury situation going on with Seiya Suzuki, so we'll bring that to you to start Waddle's World. And lots of things going on today. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
This is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
Amazing.
9 career TDs in the NFL.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
It's time to find out what's on Tom's mind.
Is that why you are here?
As we go inside Waddle's World.
Hello, welcome to Waddle's World, where baseball is king. At least it is today. Or at least it is right now. Or at least it is for the first segment. I guess, according to Jesse, Seiya is not in the lineup tonight. No word on whether or not this is something that will, you know, put him on the injured list, but not in the lineup tonight. Who's starting in right?
Well, we know that, like, Jesse had this story earlier today that Alexander Canario is getting called up, and we didn't know why, and Jesse suspected that somebody is banged up, and that person who's banged up is probably Seiya, and so he is sitting, and we don't know if he's going to the injured list, but that's the reason why Canario is getting called up. So, I do we have a lineup out yet? Whether it's just a direct, if Canario is going to be in right field, I would hope they're calling him up to play him.
I don't see a lineup yet.
He needs at bats, and I didn't like when they finally called him up last year He's another kid who's got raw power, who's got raw ability. And if he does come up, I want him to play, and I don't want him to sit.
It's been an excellent start to the season for a lot of your Cubs, including Seiya.
Yes, yes. And a lot of the, like, Bellinger's, Friedel has gone to five straight Cubs games. And through the last three in Seattle, and the last two in San Diego.
Let me guess, he's going to dwell on the negative and is telling you that Bellinger is stealing money.
He says, when are we starting to worry about Belly? And I go, I'm not worried yet.
Not 15
he's
games
off to a, No, he's off to a slow start. Let's relax there.
Nico Horner also struggling at the dish, but other than that.
Yeah, Hap had a bad series, but was off to a good start before that. And as predicted, Morel is going to still go through these really cold periods. I think he was 0 for Seattle.
He was 0 for Seattle.
He's down to about 250 now after getting off to a really good start.
He has a grand total of 6 strikeouts in his last 4 games.
But we got Bush. And
you got Bush.
And he's got 5
that's
home
good
runs.
Bush too. And that's good Bush, yes, up there on the north side.
And that's 4 straight games with a home run.
Yes.
So he's going for 5 in a row against the Diamondbacks.
So do you have your T-shirt yet?
I don't. Look, we used to have a shirt on the north side that said, "We got wood." So if we used to have the "We got wood" shirt, you've got to have a new shirt that says, "We got Bush."
Yes. Just spell it right. It's like Anheuser-Busch.
But you put the beer on there.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so everybody knows, it's B-U-S-C-H.
Right.
And I'm sure you Cub fans know that, but not everyone. Hey, better days ahead for the Sox. They had a team meeting this afternoon. Pedro won't tell you exactly the magical words that he delivered to the team or what was delivered in return. But
what would you say if you play Pedro? What do you say?
You guys suck. Pick it up or we're all out of here. No,
I
don't.
What about you, Pedro?
What about me? I'm not hitting 150. I didn't sign a 37-year-old catcher. Not my fault.
Oh, you're throwing your general manager under the bus, Pedro?
What do you want me to do? I can only put the guys out there that I'm given.
Sounds like a guy.
What do you want me to do?
Who is not long for the job.
I didn't call Tommy Pham.
Again, blaming others.
I didn't call Tommy. What do you want me to do?
You're the guy bunting all the time.
And Aloy will definitely, if I am, am I Pedro?
You're Pedro.
He's in the lineup tonight. If he's cleared, he's playing.
Well, why isn't he in the lineup then? You're the manager.
Ask Chris Getz. He's the one who doesn't like my team. I like my team.
Wait a minute. You're the one who makes the lineup card. Why isn't he in the lineup then?
You think I make up the lineup card.
So now you're throwing the general manager under the bus again? Who makes the lineup card?
You see my roster? That's all I can say.
You couldn't manage all the personalities in the clubhouse last year. That's why they had to get rid of a bunch of guys.
Could you manage these personalities?
You're the manager.
Most of them have their retirement cards already.
If you couldn't manage them, then let someone else manage them.
It's a team without personality. What am I managing? There is no personality.
I didn't know that Pedro was so ornery. Though I do hear.
What do you mean? Like I'm all baseball. You want to go out there and watch the eclipse? Go out there and watch the eclipse. You want to get out here and have a cicada conversation? Have a cicada conversation.
When are they coming, by the way,
baseball.
Pedro? When are the cicadas coming?
I don't know, but this is like the... I was on the phone with my buddy Phil on the way into work today.
Are you Waddle or are you Pedro now?
I was on the phone with my friend Waddle's buddy Phil, and he was telling me like something I already knew, but this is like the grand blossoming of the cicada.
Yes.
Like there are
centuries.
Two species. Back in the day in Cincinnati, there was this, there was a massive cicada event. Like the 17-year cicadas. This is the 17-year cicadas and the super cicadas. This is going to be crazy cicada action. I don't know if we'll survive.
Super bears, super cicadas.
That should be after Cinco or Cinco de Mayo passes, 17 wins of the 17-year cicadas.
You're someone that
could be the next Carmen Yurko.
You're a deep thinker. Do you think that this massive cicada thing is a sign?
Oh, a sign of
like what? The end of times?
No.
Oh, you know?
No, I'm okay.
It's a sign that the cicadas are coming.
The 17-year and the 7-year aligning.
I'm always very confused about the cicadas because I was told as a kid that the cicadas come every 17 years. The cicadas are here every year.
There's different styles.
I know that, but they're here
every
year. And I know this year will be the super cicada event. But the cicadas truly are here every year.
It's like a cold. You get mild cases of colds, you get moderate cases of colds, and then you just get that cold that knocks you down for days.
Will we crunch over them while
without
driving?
Without a doubt.
We'll be driving question. Over them?
Yes. You will probably have to clean out vents. And your kids are gonna, do your kids like bugs?
Not bees. Bugs. Maybe.
I didn't say bees. I'm not looking for anybody to get stung.
There's different types.
Like, will they be bothered by these, or will they think these are cool as hell? They'll make
Depends.
Noises.
I'm not sure. They could go either way on this one.
Yeah, there are going to be some kids that are frightened by
are
this.
Are we going to be eating these? Are our chefs going to be cooking these?
You're not supposed to.
Remember, because we gave the story last week.
Where they pee like all the time?
Well, they're like zombies.
I mean, I'm sure there's somebody that may tell you that they can cook you up a batch and it'll be good for you.
Yeah, they're going to deep fry them and put something on them.
I wouldn't do that. No. So, I think the meeting is done on the south side and they're ready to play ball. So go get them. Go get them. By the way, there's good golf conversation happening over the weekend as well, obviously because of the Masters. As we all saw, Scottie Scheffler dominated the Masters field, won the tournament for second time in 3 years. Otherwise, it'd be back-to-back. It wasn't. John Rahm won last year. But Scottie Scheffler just demolished the field. Do you guys know, I have this, I think this stat, use it for my good, but I'll let you in on it now. He has not had a round over par all year long in a tournament. Like, he is doing things that only Tiger Woods has done in our lifetime, or at least in the last couple of decades for us golf viewing people. It's been crazy. And there's another story out now from a London financial paper, you guys were calling it?
City AM.
City yes. AM.
Are they reliable? Or is this like the heckler?
It's London's most read financial paper, I guess. That's what the fellas are selling me on in there.
So this and is like this is like I'll the Cranes of London. This is like Crane Chicago of London.
That's what I'm hearing. Tyler's our golf expert, so would you be willing to ride with this story?
You putting your career up against it?
It's not a career. You're going to lose your career for it. Randy Merkin also sent this to us, so
I mean, especially in 2024, people play fast and loose with journalism. City AM's never let us down before, as far as I know.
I don't know if we play fast and loose with that. Not us,
but just in general, you know.
Has City AM, I don't even know if we've ever had City AM.
I'm saying they've never let us down in the past. That's what I can give you.
Never come through for us in the past.
I know, but there's got to be a first time.
What do you think,
Tyler? We'll see if they burn us.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, Lord, this is their opportunity to impress us, City AM.
Anyway, City AM is reporting that two separate sources have told them that they believe a deal is close between Rory McIlroy and LIV Golf for $850 million plus around 2% equity in LIV Golf as well.
And this comes on the back of, I guess, there were strong rumors among the golf media fellas and gals at the Masters about this happening.
Ooh, this is going to make Full Swing even better this year.
Well, I mean, listen, I like Rory a lot. And I think this is a good business decision on his behalf. I think the previous record for most one of these guys getting paid was John Rahm last year. What, $650
million? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think they offered Tiger like $1 billion, didn't they?
Yeah, it was, I want to say it was like in the 900 mil, yeah.
I mean, part of the Full Swing presentation was about the division that exists between the PGA Tour and the LIV golfers.
And Rory's on the front line, and he was the rep for between the commissioner and the players. But he also felt betrayed by the commissioner because after he kept fighting for it, the commissioner then went back on him and then...
Yes,
came up with a partnership.
I don't think that Commissioner Jay Monahan did himself any favors and didn't do his guys any favors. But with that said, and I like Rory, Rory has been very defiant about not wanting to participate with LIV. And if, in fact, this is something that is realistic, there was a quote he gave that Tyler had from last year from Rory.
Yeah, this was before the Scottish Open last year. He said, if LIV Golf was the last place to play on Earth, I would retire. That's how I feel about it.
Now, things change, and...
$800 million.
He should do it.
But I'd imagine there was an $800 million offer on the table when he said this, too.
Look, he is going to get flack for this hypocritical approach to this, and he should. Will he get past it? Yes. But for someone who just said what Tyler, you know, repeated, I mean, for them to, you know, reportedly join said awful tour for $850 million and 2%, if in fact that was the case.
I'm still confused, though. I thought both sides were going to finally come together.
It was my anticipation they were going to at some point as well. I think
so.
They
maybe he's taking
other.
The money while he can.
He should.
Only for them. Maybe this is like such a smart business thing. Take the 800 some million dollars only for them to come together in a year.
Well, they're coming to, if they do end up coming together, they're still going to be separate entities
right.
within each other. There's still a LIV tour, and there's still going to be the PGA tour. It's just all being funded under the same umbrella right now.
And maybe he made that comment before he knew they had porta potties on every hole.
That
could have been his request.
Game changer, you know?
Look, there's no way around it. Like again, it doesn't change my appreciation for him. This is a flipperoo. One that comes with an $850 million payday. I'm all good with it, but it's a flipperoo. Am I right?
100%.
Total
yeah.
flipperoo.
I have a major golf question.
Okay. You watched a lot this weekend,
yeah,
too, didn't you?
Does Scottie Scheffler look more different
with
the beard than the average human being?
Such a good question. Because I spent all weekend saying a number of times, I don't like Scottie's beard.
Oh, I think he looks much better looking with a beard than without a beard.
I don't think, from my perspective, I don't think he's a beard guy.
Oh, I think quite the opposite.
Really?
I think he is a beard guy. You know what it kind of reminds me of? People who, during COVID, grew out the beard and never went back.
It's very well manicured.
Because they kept showing the 2022 win, and it looked like old-timey picture. It looked like he won the tournament back in 1968. And I'm like, who's that old picture of? And they're like, that's Scottie Scheffler from 2022.
So the beard makes him look younger?
Well, I know people look different with a beard than with not a beard. I think he looks way more different than most.
Yeah, I like Scotty clean shaven. I'm a clean shaven Scotty fan.
Okay.
I'm just a fan of his
game.
He
looks very plain without the beard.
Well, he is a very plain guy that plays golf better than anybody on the face of the planet.
I think it gives him more sweat.
A little something extra?
Yes.
Well, that would just be a facade then, because he's not a swag guy. He even said, did you hear Tyler? He's like, golf is generally something you do that brings you very little joy.
Yeah.
It
is the essence of the sport.
He's right. He kept it into perspective, but even in victory, he just seemed a little, but that's who he is. That's his personality. You don't want him to be something he's not. He told you, hey, if my wife goes into labor, we're off. We're out.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know when he first said it was a month away.
She's what, like eight weeks away.
Do you realize he's won three of the last four tournaments he's played? He won $4 million, $4.5 million, $500,000, and then what was this purse, $3.5 million?
A little over $3.5 million. I think it was $3.6 million.
I'm telling you, like, he does stuff. He's as dominant tee to green as Tiger was. Tiger just could make any putt.
Yeah.
Could he make
15 over? What was he?
Tiger ended up 16 over, which is his worst. But, the dude's got a fused ankle, a fused back, and I still go to the television, even when he's not playing well, to watch Tiger play.
Me too, yeah.
So,
was it me or was Morikawa very
bad.
Inaccurate, yeah. Especially on the back nine? Every time I looked, he was out of the fairway.
He made some he made some clutch mistakes. I think he doubled nine. He didn't. You know where Scotty made all the shots he needed to make. Morikawa
was all amen corner. Yeah. Like, amen corner just took names yesterday.
Yeah, it did.
And it didn't take Scotty.
You know, there was a day when people thought that Augusta was on the cusp of just kind of being a circus course, where guys were just going to put giant numbers up because it became so easy. And when the wind blew and they've lengthened that course and they've made it a little bit more difficult. I mean, Scotty was, what, 11 under? And then
11 under.
11, 7 under was the second place. Mm-hmm. So I think the course held its own. All right, enough of that. I do have a story about, this is one of the weirdest stories I've had, is a farm story. I have a farm story and a divorce story that both will leave you scratching your heads.
Okay.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM. Listen now on ESPN 1000. This is Waddle and Sylvie, ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
I've just been educated by Meller that Seiya Suzuki is on the injured list. They have placed him on the injured list.
So and with an oblique injury.
Yes, he's had one of those in the past. Has he?
And it's never good.
Those things are not good.
No.
Yeah, the annoying thing with obliques oftentimes is you can't put a timetable on it because you have to rest. And then when you finally, you know, whatever it is, 2 to 4 weeks, and then you have to go out there and try again, you can very easily re-injure it. So it's a tricky injury.
Boy, this is, I'm going to segue in a couple of different directions here. The next story is one that I know is, I think your mom texted you about, Kenny Holtzman, who threw 2 no-hitters with the Cubs and won 4 World Series titles, has passed away at 78. How long was he a Cub?
He was a Cub for a bit, yeah.
And Twice, right?
He obviously won those with the A's.
Not with the Cubs. Yeah. Three with the A's, 1 with the Yankees.
Yeah.
Your mom was...
She was broken up about that. He wasn't old. 78, did you say?
78.
So she was upset to hear that. I remember he was one of the first players, I believe, that we went to go meet. Like back in the day.
Like at a card show?
I think it was at a bank.
Okay.
Like it was like a bank meeting. Like at one of the Skokie banks.
And hey, Ken, this is my son, Mark. He's a
I was very young, and he was not nice, from what I remember. That he was one of those guys, like how they say, do not, like, I didn't
meet your heroes.
I just remember her telling me the story that we went to go meet him. And he was not, he wasn't very friendly, but she remained a fan of his. One of the first players I remember going to meet was John Mengel, Crash Mengel, who was very nice to me.
Which I think is a much better marketing ploy. I don't know what bank it was, but I just don't think that's good business. Hey, bring your kids in. Kenny Holtzman's going to be here, and Kenny's not. If he's not going to be, whoever the person is, isn't going to be nice to the patrons, I don't think that bodes well for the business.
Right.
Like, that's not a great marketing approach.
No. No.
Like, what?
And it's literally the place where you go get your check.
Yeah.
What athlete would you go to just to get, like, spit on? You know, like, listen, he's not a nice guy. He might spit on you, but come on out and meet him.
I'd probably go do that for Tiger. I'm just saying.
That's interesting. That's good.
How good a player do they need to be?
For you to put yourself in a potentially disrespected situation.
Tom Brady.
MJ.
Yeah, but, like, I've met him so many. Like, not anymore.
Tom Brady
for sure.
Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
What would you guys do for money? I've only got a minute and a half, I want to read this whole story. I mean, seriously, to what lengths would you go if you were in a bind? Think about that, okay? Just think about that. What? What are you laughing at? To what lengths would you go?
Because that only goes into the gutter.
Yeah. Willow Springs man staged farm accident, paid someone to cut off his feet. In Tory Thompson's 20 years of law enforcement, the Howell County Sheriff's Office lieutenant has examined his share of bizarre incidents when a man appeared to try and cash in on an insurance policy, staging a bloody farm equipment accident. It became the strangest case of his entire career. Would-be fraud and gruesome scenes are all part and parcel of Thompson's job, but the combination of those circumstances is odd. The details make it even odder. In November, the sheriff's office sent out a relatively vague press release to local media about a situation involving a man in Willow Springs who had lost his feet in an apparent stage incident with a brush hog, a rotary mower often attached to a tractor.
This is our Willow Springs?
No, just in this, just as a normal Willow Springs, okay. Not your Willow Springs. Poorly executed plan. Never seen anything like it. When the call came in to emergency responders, it was described as involving a man whose feet were severed while brush hogging. But Thompson said it was quickly apparent the incident was staged. The feet were freshly severed. That much was true, according to Thompson, who said the man was in his 60s and a known paraplegic in his lower extremities. Authorities were immediately curious about the tourniquets on his legs and who put them there in the immediate aftermath of the alleged incident. The man, who the local paper is not naming because he was not criminally charged, apparently had some help. Thompson said a man from Florida made the trip to the small Ozarks town to cut off the man's legs with a hatchet.
Oh, my goodness.
Executing an alleged plan to commit insurance fraud. The wounds were not very convincing, though, the lieutenant said, with cuts that were much too clean to have been done by a brush hog. Quote, if it were done by a brush hog, it would have been a bloody, gory mess. I've seen those types of accidents. This wasn't that.
Well, let me ask you a question.
What would you do to defraud an insurance?
This is a weird question. If he was getting his feet cut off because he was a paraplegic anyway, but he wanted to collect it for the insurance money, why wouldn't he cut it off with the machine? He's cutting his feet off anyway, right?
Right. Yeah. Why? I don't know.
I think too much could go wrong.
Maybe the fear was is that machine would start and then
it would go
just,
all the way.
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
I wouldn't do it. No. For money, no.
But what, I mean...
What would I do?
Yeah.
I would eat something.
Right?
That's like probably what? It.
That's like, the craziest thing you do?
Uh-huh.
Would you ever cut off a pinky or a toe?
No.
Nothing of that nature?
Uh-uh.
Would you have a toenail removed without anesthesia?
Oh,
would you let somebody take a fingernail off?
For money?
For Yes. You would?
Yes.
How much would it have to be? Do you know how hard it would be or how painful it would be to tear a fingernail
off?
Is
it really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they used to torture people back in medieval.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
By pulling off a
nails. Oh, yeah. They remove nails.
Oh, yeah, sir.
What if you had an extra pair of arms? Would you let them cut those off?
No. What would you do, Mallor? What would you do for money?
How good was I in bed with those four arms?
Excuse me?
How good was I?
The best.
But then no.
Those forearms. Forearms like quantity or those Popeye forearms? Look at me.
I'm Steve Garvey.
Steve Garvey. How was I in bed?
By the way, if you missed our conversation that we had with Tom Thayer or Waddle's World or when we have Barstool Big Cat on, make sure you grab it on our brand new YouTube page. It's youtube.com/@Waddle and Sylvie. All the fun there. You get our normal podcast wherever you get your podcast. Now, there's all of the fun stuff that we do, including our conversations and shorts. It's youtube.com/@Waddle and Sylvie. And when you're there, make sure you subscribe.
And why do you have to bring in a guy from Florida to do what he did?
I think
is Florida the home for
crazy. It's the home for crazy. And I think they put out the all points bulletin. And that was probably the closest someone came to saying yes.
You never told me what you'd do for money if you got caught in a financial pinch.
I guess I'd have to explore my options.
Okay. All right.
I'd probably eat something, like Sylvie said.
Probably eat something. It's the most popular response.
I'll get your answer coming up. Okay. We'll get Waddle's answer. If you want to participate, 332-3776. Busy day today. We'll recap everything going on. The Cubs lost another player. The White Sox had a meeting. They gained a player, though. The Bears were 10 days away from the draft, and Aki's A-list. It's all next.